Hello and welcome to the Big Apple Fries Movie Podcast.
As long as we keep doing these, we are still Malaysia's longest running podcast with the same host.
Oh, really? That's, you gotta add like...
I'm adding that on now, because I think there are other ones, but they've been like...
But they've switched up.
They've been through changes.
Right.
Whereas we never change.
Nah.
We fear change.
I'm not a fan.
No.
I don't like change. This is a prime example of it, because I'm going to be talking about how I have no interest in change in watching a remake of a film that we just watched.
It's a beautiful segue into... Well, first of all, I'm Ian McNally, this is Gavin Yap, and this is the Yap Prize Podcast, and that's a beautiful segue into the fact that today we're going to be talking about 1994's The Crow.
Great research here.
Research, this podcast, it's all about, it's what we're all about here, right?
Yeah, I can't remember what fucking year it was.
But we're going to talk about the Brandon Lee Crow from Alex Proyas.
Yes. Yeah, so we just watched it.
Yeah.
And I'm shook.
Yeah?
It's such a cool movie. It's aged beautifully. You know, it doesn't feel dated in any way. I mean...
994, nailed it. Sorry.
994, nailed it. It doesn't feel dated in any way. I mean, even the effects. Okay, the sort of like the superimposed faces on the bodies falling down... You know, like that's probably
classic
the,
RoboCop shit. Dick yeah, Jones crap.
Yeah, that's probably the only, like, with the super long arms.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's probably the only real kind of like special effect that was noticeably dated or bad.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I mean, the use of miniatures, the use of like sort of remote control cars, and just the way it all sort of seamlessly ties together, it's aged really well. It does not. There's no shot in this movie that doesn't look good.
Yeah. So we watched this, and I had some free time a couple of weeks ago, and I watched this, and then I had a very, after a few drinks, I had a very emotional time on Twitter thinking about it, because again, what Gavin said is true, but it's going to be hard to divorce that from the fact that the feelings of our time, because like they say that the music that you love for your life is the music you love when you're 16, 17, and this is that kind of thing. This is like Nirvana's around.
Yeah.
You're all very much so. Pilots of Pearl Jam. What was your first experience of seeing The Crow?
My first experience of seeing The Crow, well, I've never seen it on the big screen.
Like, me neither.
I never saw it in the cinema. I don't think it ever came to the cinema here.
Hmm.
But I was still living in Penang when I watched it, and I watched it the way most Malaysians watched a lot of movies back then, was like fucking pirated fucking videotapes.
Yes.
You know. And I remember that the copy that I saw it on wasn't super clear.
Oh, right.
But it still looked great. And it was an emotional experience watching it because, you know, I mean, I grew up as a Bruce Lee fan, and... It was actually, like, you know, important to me that Brandon Lee was following in his dad's footsteps and was carving out a career for himself and was, you know, I mean back then there was no fucking Asian representation and all that fucking shit that exists now. There was none of that. So
when did Rumble in the Bronx come out?
Rumble in the Bronx came out later.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, like, Jackie Chan was always like a huge star in Hong Kong, but it took a while before people in Hollywood started paying attention to him. And, you know, Bruce Lee was just such an iconic figure, and from my dad's generation, and because my dad was such a big Bruce Lee fan, he made sure that I fucking watched all of the Bruce Lee movies. And I remember when Brandon Lee started to act, and he did this movie, Laser Mission, with Ernest Borgnine, you know, and then he did Big Showdown in Little Tokyo with Dolph Lundgren, and I really enjoyed that movie, and I was thinking, like, holy shit, like, he's got his dad's charisma.
He's got the juice.
And he did this other kung fu movie called Rapid Fire, which is a guilty pleasure. You know, it's not a great movie, but there's enough in it for you to see that he had his dad's charm. He had his dad's presence, you know, and I was familiar with the Crow material. So when I heard that he was doing this, it was like, fuck, this is going to be awesome. And when the news broke that he had been killed on set, it destroyed me. Like, I mean, that's the first time I ever remember being really sort of affected by a celebrity death.
Mm.
You know, that it really fucked me up, because it was like, no, and I wouldn't believe it. And I remember that this also happened at the same time that the Bruce Lee biopic, Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story, came out.
With Jason Scott Lee.
And I went to see that movie like five fucking times in the cinema.
Really?
Yeah. I saw Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story, like five fucking times in the cinema.
How come this has never caught the... We should do a show on that.
We should. And in Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story, Bruce Lee is like, you know, literally battling his demons.
Yeah, it's a giant fucking samurai he fights. Yeah. Like the samurai from Brazil, right? Brazil? Yeah.
Yeah, and in the film, and this is after Brandon Lee had passed, and like in the film, there's this sequence where he's battling his demons and then the demon's about to go after Brandon. And Bruce Lee has to conquer his demons in order for his future generation to be safe.
Yeah.
And in the movie, he saves Brandon.
Yeah.
And it just like, fuck me up. Because, you know, Brandon had already passed away.
Mm.
And then it took, a year for The Crow to actually come out. And when I saw it, it just destroyed me. Because it's such an emotional film, even without the tragedy.
Mm.
And you add the tragic aspect to it. And the first time you see Brandon Lee in this movie, he's clawing out of his grave.
Yeah.
And I'd never experienced anything like that before as a moviegoer and as a fan. That whole sort of like, what the fuck is going on? This feels all so real and so meta and so fucked and so tragic and all of these things at once. And on top of that, it's such a cool movie.
Yeah.
You know, and as the movie goes on, I just found myself being even more upset because he's so good in it.
The star power is insane. It's coming off the screen in ways. Yeah.
And it was arguably the first really successful sort of comic book adaptation. Not talking about, you know, like the obvious ones like Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
But a real sort of like comic book adaptation from a real edgy property that was done really well by people who clearly understood it.
But like Superman was 78?
Something like that.
Yeah. Batman was 89. And like it was hit and miss whether a comic book adaptation would be a good movie, never mind a good adaptation. And this is still like 6 years before X-Men comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's about 4 years before Blade?
Yeah.
98, right?
Yeah.
And so like, it's still like, it's not the world we live in now where it's like you have your expectations for what a superhero movie can be.
Yeah. You didn't know what to expect, honestly. I mean, there was just something about it that was so edgy and so cool and so romantic and tragic and all of these things, you know, and it's so tied together with Brandon Lee.
Mm.
It's the only movie I can think of that opens with the actor's name first before anything, and then the title, and then the movie just gets going.
Yeah.
You know, and then when the movie ends, and then it's got the dedication to Brandon and Eliza. He was like engaged to this woman, Eliza Hutton. And they were like months from getting married or something. I mean, the accident that killed him, it was like three or four days before they were supposed to wrap production.
Yeah.
And it was while they were shooting the scene where the gang are like fucking...
Where they kill him,
yeah.
It's Fun Boy and T-Bird are the ones shooting, right?
Yeah. And so the actor who played Fun Boy, Michael Massey, like he was the guy who actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, you know what I mean? Like I remember reading an article in Premier Magazine, like Michael Massey was in a state of shock. I mean, like, yeah, no shit, you know? But it just didn't feel real.
Yeah, there's so much tied up in that. Because meanwhile, on the other side of the planet, we're not so much into the Asian representation in Ireland, in the countryside.
Yeah.
But this was, again, pre-internet.
Yeah.
This trailer was on the videos for other videos. Our Friday nights were mostly spent either finding somehow to get alcohol and sit in a field or get a video from the local VHS.
Uh-huh, yeah. And I remember those days.
And I couldn't... I don't remember why there was... The Crow was never an option to go see in the cinema. I was 16, so it was either age group thing or maybe at that point already I didn't want to see it in this shithole cinema in Nace.
Yeah.
My mate Dave went to see Star Trek 6 there and he said, the screen's smaller than my TV. So there was this... It was like, not video nasties, but it was prime video time. We would go into the video shop. That's where we saw Decoys. That's where we saw One Tough Bastard, all this kind of shit. Because all the shit we wanted to watch was out.
One Tough Bastard, that's a great film.
And The Crow was out all the fucking time. We were trying to book this shit for months. And when we eventually got it, it was like, finally. Because it would be on the, you know, the trailers at the beginning of every fucking movie you watch. Yeah. And we'd go to a friend of ours, House Paul, and his parents would go out on a Friday night. Which is kind of cool now. Think about it. I was like, when I think about, like, you know, my friends who have kids, it's like, no, his parents just went out. They were like, we had three kids. Fuck it. We're going out on a Friday night. He can take care of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
His shithead friends can come over and raid the alcoholic cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll turn a blind eye.
Good people.
So we got, I remember myself and Paul, because the two of us got the video and we were like running up the road and going, the crow! Because it's like, we've been waiting for so long to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching it on like, you know, a TV that's a percentage of the size of the TV in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just being blown away and just like falling in love with it. even without knowing, like, maybe I'd seen the James O'Barr comic in Forbidden Planet, which is a shop I just went into because I couldn't afford enough comics. But you just go in there,
yeah,
listen to them playing Alice in Chains all the time.
Yeah.
The same in London, right?
Yeah.
And just, like, look at stuff and go, like,
I want to go to there.
All of this is just, like, firing your imagination.
Yeah.
And The Crow was like, is this going to fail to fulfill that? And it didn't.
It didn't. No, it was like, you know, when we were watching it just now, like that opening shot. I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, that fucking opening shot where it's just sort of like gliding through that, like, that gothic residential area.
Where's it supposed to be? Is it Detroit?
It doesn't matter.
It's, you know, the city.
Yeah. And, you know, just looking at it, I'm just like, fuck, this is the cool, one of the coolest movies ever made.
It doesn't hurt the music.
No, it is one of the all-time best soundtracks ever.
Better than Judgment Night?
You know what? Yes. If I had to choose between the soundtrack of The Crow and the soundtrack of Judgment Night, I would take The Crow.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both killer soundtracks, but just in terms of re-listenability,
yeah,
like the Crow wins hands down.
Absolutely.
Like
there's so much like thematic stuff there, like with the Cure's Burn, which is like just like
fucking as amazing, getting ready,
and you're like, this is amazing. Like I think we talked about this a long time ago about like listening to the soundtrack to Inception when you're doing shopping makes it sound awesome.
Yeah,
listening to Burn when you're doing anything,
yeah,
it's like I am going to go out and kill hundreds of people.
I am going to rule the fucking world.
Exactly. And I didn't realize it until watching it this time, where it's like the next song after it's that like is Nine Inch Nails.
It's like every time I listen to Hey Man, Nice Shot, I want to go out there and beat the shit out of someone. I want to get a crowbar and just beat a random person. Hey, man! Nice one!
I guess one of the reasons why we want to do these older movies is because that, like, these are seminal and a big part of our growing up and a big part of our psyches and our...
Mm-hmm.
We're both wearing black right now, probably because of the club. The
yeah.
Crow. Even in these climbs.
And it's also, also timed with the fact that the remake is coming out this year.
Absolutely. But it's also to try and give people who listen to this hopefully an idea. Like, if you're not familiar with the movie,
yeah,
why we love it and why we think you should love it. And that's one thing that you start off there. Like, from the moment this movie starts, again, we were there at the time and this was cutting edge-ish, or it was like the best use of the technology they had at the time.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that, like, it's like when you're watching Jurassic Park and like the T-Rex is physical sometimes and then CGI other times.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like, oh, everything's a CGI shit show or everything's a bad puppet.
Yeah.
Everything that in this movie looks like it's so what they needed to get for that shot.
Yeah.
And that carries through to, I think, what there's so much, the script is so fucking tight.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that, like, this movie does that modern superhero movies don't do. Like the fact that you never see Eric before he dies.
Yeah.
Like, you never see... It's a bit, like, similar with... Not similar, but there's similarities with Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
The pendant and stare and stuff like that. But you get to see Nicolas Cage before he becomes a Ghost Rider, right?
Yes.
And this is, like, whether it's because of, like, what happened or lack of footage or just the plan.
I mean, you don't
see him before he dies.
Yeah.
And it's just... There's no fat on this movie.
There's no fat on this movie. It, even like the script writing is very economical.
Mm.
You know, the best thing is like, you know, in the third act, you know, like after the Crow gets injured and everything, it's like, I thought you were invincible. It's like, I was. I'm not anymore.
Yes.
Boom. Move on.
We're done.
We're done.
We don't need a metaphysical treatise on why the Crow links him to the afterlife.
It's none of this shit where it's like, I was invincible, but my power's linked to the Crow.
No.
And then fucking, like, no, none of that shit.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
No.
Like, you said something early on in the film, absolutely bang on, where it's that there's no spoon feeding in this movie.
No. You're never told that Eric... what his powers are or what anything. It literally is show, don't tell all the way through.
Yeah.
He cuts his it's very clever that he cuts his hands the first thing and they heal.
Yeah.
And it's a dodgy effect-ish. Yeah.
It's a dodgy effect, but you don't give a fuck because you're so in it.
And he doesn't go like, oh, wow, I heal real good.
Yeah.
You don't need that line.
Yeah.
It treats its audience with respect.
Yeah.
And that goes the whole way through it, where like at one point he just pulls the drugs out of someone's arm. And it's like, sure.
Yeah.
This is fine. I can totally take this. This is part of his power set.
Like he's here to punish the sinners.
Yeah.
He's here to punish the guilty. But if you're not guilty, like, he can fucking help you out.
Yeah. I wonder if Marvel and the other people making superhero movies, where it's become a chain, right? It's become a franchise where it's basically they're cranking them out and they're trying to crank out more and more. And the more they crank them out, the less it feels like there is a care and attention taken to it. Nothing in this movie feels like, okay, we got enough. Let's go.
Yeah.
Everything feels like it matters and that they put time and attention into it. The bad guys, there's Tintin,
Fun Boy,
Skank, yeah.
T-Bird.
These are the four guys who fuck up Eric. I mean, we're talking around the plot because we were so aware of it, but like, himself and his wife are killed, he comes back to avenge their deaths.
Yeah.
The four guys are David Patrick Kelly, the rest of the actors, they all have a look, you feel their characters within moments of seeing them.
Yeah.
There's a exposition character, which is John Polito, right?
Yeah.
He's just a guy who has the ring that Tintin sold from Eric, their wedding ring.
Yeah.
This could be a know-nothing character. It could be like a connective tissue to get you from plot A to plot B.
Yeah.
But it gives us some of the greatest lines in all of cinema when John Polito realizes he cannot kill Eric Draven. And he just starts saying, "Oh, shit on me! Yeah. Shit on me!"
Yeah.
And it's so... there's so many...
You're street grease! Street grease, motherfucker! Street grease, motherfucker!
There's so much, like, every line.
Yeah.
Feels like they put, like...
Is perfectly cast.
Yes.
It's like there's a scene where, you know, you've got David Patrick Kelly. David Patrick Kelly, you know, you got you got Michael Wincott, you got Bai Ling, and you got Tony Todd in there, and all in the same frame.
Sorry, Tony Todd in a leather hat.
Right.
And that's
you got these four fucking iconic actors they're iconic actors if you love cinema.
Yeah.
Like, if you love cinema, you know who all of these fucking people are.
Or if you love Star Trek, because Tony Todd turns up a lot in Star Trek.
Fun Boy and Top Dollar both are villains in 24.
Yeah. And, you know, John Polito is amazing in Miller's Crossing and everything he turns up in. He's The Rocketeer. I was listening to another podcast The other day.
Like, John Polito's one of those guys, like, he's like the definition of character actor.
I was listening to a podcast talking about The Rocketeer and they were shitting all over it and I was physically angry. I was like, I need to get on a flight and punch these people. But they played the clip of The Rocketeer trying to save somebody.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, it's okay, folks, it's all part of the show. And then the moment later, the plane crashes into a gas tank and blows up thousands of dollars worth of airline fuel. And it's like, it's okay, folks, it's all part of the show. Because his bottom dollar is fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just...
The Rocketeer is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
We'll do that at some point. Because I'm so mad at these fuckers. But it's a small role.
Yeah.
But he
makes the most of it.
Even him flying out the back door as the whole place explodes.
Yeah. I know. The Coen brothers understand the importance of having John Polito in your movie.
Well, there was that thing where there was a list of things that were in a Coen brothers movie that have to be a Coen brothers movie.
Yeah.
And it was a fat man screaming. Bonus points if it's John Polito.
Yeah,
he was giving me the hi-hat.
I just love, like, you know, like, just to be completely sidetracked because you brought up The Rocketeer. So, like, Bill Campbell is the lead in The Rocketeer.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time I saw Bill Campbell, he was playing, like, a wife beater in the Jennifer Lopez movie, Enough. And it was just... I was like, holy shit.
I'm beating my wife, PB.
Like, what just happened?
20 fucking years happened.
I'm pissed. I should be a fucking A-lister. What the fuck happened?
Yeah, what did happen?
No, Timothy Dalton was amazing in The Rocketeer.
Yes.
Anyway.
That's another show.
Yeah, that's another show.
The efficiency of this movie is fantastic. First time we see Eric, he's crawling out of his grave. And he doesn't say anything for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just him and the bird.
Yeah.
And like, free docks.
Yeah.
Or free boots. Mm-hmm. And then there's so many iconic shots. I love this shot of him when the Cure is playing, reaching down and petting Gabriel.
Yeah. It's such a great show.
There's so many shots like that in this where it's like Alex Proyas is supposed to be just high-fiving himself
there's so many moments in this movie where I'm just like, this is such a cool movie. This is such a cool fucking movie, you know, and there's not many movies like that. And Alex Proyas, I mean, you know, he's done some questionable things.
He said some questions. I can't remember what it was. There was some controversy a couple of years ago about him being weird about something.
Yeah, I mean.
But also, he did Gods of Egypt, right?
Yeah, he did Gods of Egypt. Yeah. But I mean, like, fucking.
I saw that movie in the cinema. I haven't seen The Crow in the cinema. What the fuck is going on with me?
But I mean, like, he did The Crow, he did Dark City.
Yeah.
So, fucking guy gets a pass for life as far as I'm concerned.
As long as you watch the director's cut of Dark City.
I've never seen the director's cut of Dark City.
So the normal cut,
yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland tells you the plot in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The director's cut, he doesn't.
Awesome.
I mean, now you know what the twist is.
Yeah.
But like,
I'm trying to remember. Have I seen the director's cut? I can't remember. But I love that movie. Now that movie, I saw on opening day in the cinema.
Really?
Because when Dark City came out, I was living in the States.
Hmm.
So it was like, fuck yeah.
And you didn't know to stick your fingers in your ears and not listen to him.
I didn't know. How the fuck did I know?
It was fucking like Hollywood screwing over your movie. There's a mystery about this movie. What's going on?
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
In this city where everyone falls asleep and forgets their memories every night, this thing's happening. What the fuck are you doing?
This is studio executive notes.
Yeah.
But I just like remember like you know, I loved Kiefer Sutherland's performance in that movie.
Yeah.
Because he's got that every line is just.
And he's not stabbing anyone in the eye.
No.
I appreciate him. He's not doing that.
Damn it, Chloe!
Chloe! but yeah, so the efficiency, and then just, I think, what struck you this time was the humor, right?
Because it's been a really long time since, I've watched it. Mm. And I think when I first saw it, I was just too upset.
Mm.
I was too upset to really appreciate how funny it was. And it's not super funny, but when it's funny, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's some really funny line deliveries in this film.
Like, even when Funboy is getting dispatched, and he's like, you've gotten blood all over my sheets.
Look what you did to my sheets. There's a big fucking bird over there. You know,
there's no reason for any of these lines to be amazing.
Or even like when Skank is like, just retelling the story. And it's like, T-Bird, here's to you, buddy. And like, takes a shot.
Exactly. It's like, you missed it because you were laughing so hard. Michael Wiggins like, I think we should just record this and play it back in slow motion. And they have a confidence in their story where it's like, Michael Wincott's character and Bai Ling, they've no reason to be involved.
Yeah.
They just see there's a power here they can take over with regards to Eric Draven's connection to the Crow in the afterlife.
Yeah.
But like, they're just like involved because it's fun for them.
Yeah.
They did not do anything. The plot would happen and they would be fine.
Yeah. They nearly got away with it. And it's like, after Skank was dead, it's like, I'm done here.
Yeah.
I'm done. My work is done. It's like, nah, you gotta kidnap a kid, you dumb shit.
Yeah.
You know?
I was on my way out.
Yeah.
When you fucked me up.
And it's just, it's like, that fucking line is like, oh, I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook. Well, your mama must be so proud of you.
I don't know, Skank.
Skank's dead.
But that's what I'm saying. The element of like...
What is this? Happy horse shit.
Yeah, the happy horse shit is a line that's stayed with me forever. There's lines in this that are like the happy horse shit. Bang away on Darla. I have never met a Darla in real life.
I have.
Have you?
I've met a Darla.
I would not be able to resist, because they have the most disdain in this world. It's like, you know, oh, you're going home. You go with the barman, says something.
I have actually, not
you've been
here.
Banging away on a Darla?
No. Mm. But I have, like, gone up to, like, a parking meter and dry humped it. and said that line while drunk.
Well, yeah. Hasn't everybody?
I don't think everyone's done it.
It doesn't play so well in Dublin.
No. Oh, and in San Jose, California, it goes down a treat. Literally everybody knows what you're referencing.
But it's just like, again, I don't really want to see how T-Bird and the boys hooked up, but it's like, Skank is such a shithead.
Yeah.
Tintin, the line, the line about Tintin is like, oh, someone stuck all his knives in him in
all his major organs in alphabetical order.
It's like, at no point in this script were they like, we need to just like exposit.
Yeah.
We have to, like, everything David Michael Kelly says is that moment when he switches from, why are you doing this? What's going on?
Yeah,
he's acting with his face taped to the wall.
And you can see him realizing, like, I know you. And that switch in his face, but it's like, but you ain't you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
This movie is grappling with the fact that there is life after death. And what does he, in the form of T-Bird, a guy who likes to blow shit up, is reckoning with the theological impact of this music. There ain't no coming back.
Yeah.
And like, so for him to start spouting, I know it's a Paradise Lost there, is the poem.
Yeah.
Like, for him to start spouting that, it just fits.
Yeah.
It didn't feel weird or forced. And he's like,
he
saw how awful goodness was.
Yeah. And no, I think, like, watching it again, what really struck me is it manages to be something that a lot of revenge movies, because it is essentially a revenge film.
Yeah.
But it is also very much a love story.
Mm.
But what really struck me is how beautiful it is. Not just to look at, but it's a beautiful film. It has a very gentle soul.
Mm.
For a film that is as violent as it is and is as hardcore as it is, at its core, it's actually a very life-affirming, very loving, very gentle, sort of beautiful, emotional movie.
Mm.
And, you know, like, there were certain parts, you know, you talk about getting emotional. There were certain parts where I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Am I about to cry? You know?
I mean, again, I watched this about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Emotional wreck because it's been a while. Yeah. Watched it again today, so yeah. You think I would be inured to it.
Yeah.
No, I was tearing up when, the not the moments you expect with the Shelley stuff. It was like Eric in Officer Albrecht, Ernie Hudson's house.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like where he's like, I'm sorry about what happened, you know, like, I'm sorry about what happened to you. And just the look on his face, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
The performance and the look on his face. And also Brandon Lee's voice, it's a very soulful voice.
Mm.
And it's not an action hero voice, you know. It's not like Jason
I'm really caught up about my wife dying.
Yeah, you know, it's very much kind of like when he's like saying like, "Trust me, nothing is trivial," you know. And then the
these will kill you.
Yeah, and like the tone of his voice, it's a very gentle soul.
As that theme, as that swells, and he's talking about, "I was going to use your door."
Yeah,
that destroyed me this time. Yeah. I mean, it destroyed other parts, but it was just that, like, we've seen movies and different things, The Punisher and all that kind of stuff, where we've seen Death Wish, all these things, where, and especially where someone comes back from the supposed dead, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're supposed to be dead, and they come back and they kill everybody, and that's all you ever get.
Yeah.
But this is, like, him actually dealing with the fact that it is death, it is loss. She might be waiting for him in the afterlife, but they never really touch on that.
Yeah.
It is just, like, raging out.
Yeah.
And the time it takes to have those moments. Yeah. That... Fuck, again, that moment where he's just on the street on the way home and he stops off and leans against the post in the most iconic fucking poster pose of all time.
Yeah.
And kids run by in Halloween outfits and it goes to slow-mo.
Yeah.
I'm broken inside.
Yeah. No, it's such a beautiful moment. I mean, and that's something that I... Your neighbors are fucking hardcore.
I live in Brooklyn in 1970, in 1975.
But no, like... That was what I really took away from it, watching it again after so many years of not watching it, is just how beautiful it was and how emotional it was.
There's so much heart there that's not in an awful lot of action movies.
Yeah.
Even, you know...
And it is one of those movies that, for me... Look, I'm not a huge fan of reboots and remakes, but I'll check them out because there are some good ones. But this is one of those movies that I know that there's a remake coming out, and I know that there's a whole generation of people out there that are not familiar with the original and will probably go and see it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, the remake can be good. It can make whatever business it's gonna make, but I just am not interested. And it's not because like, oh fuck this movie. It's nothing to do with that. I cannot think of any film where it is so closely interlinked with the actor.
But it's also, it would be one thing if he passed away and it was bad. Yeah. This is also like, this is up there with Aliens, where it feels like a perfect movie.
Yeah.
The pacing, all these character actors we're talking about, it's not just the Brandon Lee performance.
Yeah, no, but it's like, can you think of any other movie where something like this happened and for it to turn out the way that it is and for the subject matter of the movie to be what it is? And it just feels... oddly kind of
poetic.
Fake, poetic in a way that
it's a movie about death.
Yeah.
That is, I get that, but also I can understand where you're coming from with regards to with him, but
that's just my own personal experience of it. Yeah. Like, you know, if you want to go see the remake, go ahead. I don't give a shit.
Oh, totally.
But like for me, this movie doesn't exist to me.
Yeah.
It's like there's only one fucking Crow movie.
But for me, it's because of the movie. It's not, I understand all the things around it, but the movie itself is like, I can divorce it from all the stuff about Brandon Lee around it and just watch it on its own as well. Just say like I said, like tying it to an Aliens or an Evil Dead or something like that, where it's like, no, you don't need to do this again.
Yeah,
there's whatever you think you're adding to this, you ain't.
Yeah.
There's nothing to add.
Yeah.
Because as we've talked about, the funny moments in the script, the character beats, the way that Michael Wincott talks.
Yeah.
I doubt, from watching the trailer of the new movie, it looks like there's a load of motherfuckers who get murdered and they don't have the same amount of character as one Dread from Tintin.
Yeah.
Whereas in this is like four guys, you know their deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like you can see there's character, like we were talking about, like there's so much character in each of these people.
Yeah.
That like it bounces off the screen immediately. The new one is like you're murdering indiscriminate guys.
Yeah.
Name three villains from John Wick that he kills.
Yeah, good point.
Right? And I'm not meaning to shit on John Wick, but it is an element of that, like...
Well, I mean,
this like... We are killing these four guys. We're going to make these four guys have... Every moment they have is important.
Like Viggo.
Okay.
Viggo. I can't remember Viggo's son. Theon Greyjoy.
That's not Viggo.
It's Viggo.
It's not Viggo Mortensen.
No, Viggo is the name of the character.
Okay. I thought you meant Viggo. Viggo Mortensen, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, no. You got Viggo, his son, Theon Greyjoy.
That's the first movie. There's four more. Three more. There's the guy from the new Crow movie.
Yeah, yeah,
He's in the last one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, the Marquis de Grammont.
Yeah, yeah. Is that his name?
Yeah, the Marquis de Grammont. See, I remember three.
I mean, I don't have any problem with the John Wick movies, and don't write in complaining. But it's just it's the element of that, like, he kills so many motherfuckers in that movie.
Yeah.
They have to spread out the character to, like, the mini-bosses and bigger bosses.
Yeah.
This is like, no, these guys are what you need to know. And Tony Todd does not need to be this cool. There's a part with Tony Todd and Ernie Hudson where they're just turning away from the camera and sad sax plays.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know those moments, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah.
When he's doing that, like Ernie Hudson's not like, oh, at least he didn't do that walking against the wind shit.
No, but what I love is that you don't need Tony Todd in this movie.
No.
But the fact that you got Tony Todd.
He could be like heavy set guy from Central Casting.
Yeah, but the fact that you got Tony Todd.
And he's wearing glasses and a leather hat.
It just adds so much class.
And he's got a big fucking gun. He didn't.
Where does he keep that shit?
He doesn't even use that big fucking gun. Top Dollar uses it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
At one point, give me that shit.
It's just already boring the shit out of me. Yeah, fuck it.
So that's it. It's like Michael Wincott is already totally disarming every complaint you could have about the movie in the middle of the scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's so fucking. I mean, after this, I was surprised. He did a lot of great stuff. He's like, I'm surprised he wasn't just bigger.
Yeah.
Because he was so good and his voice is so gravelly and his hair is so long and lustrous.
Yeah. I think we broke her.
I like the pretty eyes. That's another lineup that has always been in my head forever. Like, I like the pretty eyes.
And another part that like nearly got me was like, you know, when Sarah goes to look for him, you know, it's like, I thought you cared. And then like he shows up, like backlit. He's like, I do care. Like that, like
that fucking moment.
Like that fucking moment. Like, oh shit!
And he's like in an amazing pose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like,
God. I've just done a superhero landing into your heart.
Yeah, fuck. I think it's coming. I'm getting the fear.
No, and it's got like. Those 6 or 7 notes.
Yeah, iconic.
Having not heard them in a while, when I watched it the last time.
Yeah.
Done. It's like, it wasn't even the first, because they're very sparsely used.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are used, it's like an atomic bomb in your heart.
Yeah.
It's done.
It's brilliant.
So good.
Yeah.
And that's not on the main soundtrack.
Yeah, no, that was a separate soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, so I mean, if you haven't seen this movie, I don't know what to say other than fucking watch it.
Despite us reliving our youth, it's also an awesome action movie.
Yeah.
There's so many cool shots. Him swan diving backwards off the roof into the trash and realizing he's invincible and laughing. That laugh on his face.
Yeah.
Fucking great. The fight scene on the church at the end.
Yeah. Actually, now that you bring that up, is, you know, watching the movie again, how much the Ben Affleck, the Mark Steven Johnson Daredevil movie ripped it off.
Yeah.
It's quite ridiculous.
That's 2006?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whenever. I mean, like, I'm a big Ben Affleck fan, and I
like Daredevil.
I like Daredevil.
We will do that on the podcast at some point.
The director's cut of the Mark Steven Johnson Daredevil is not. It's a pretty good movie.
It's still got one of the best realizations of what he sees.
Yes.
The way that they do that, and him banging the pole.
Yeah.
Also, Colin Farrell is fucking unhinged in that movie, and I fucking love it.
And like that old lady on the plane, where she's like talking about her son-in-law. It's like, you know, like he was a colored fella. You know, like he had a little bit of cream in his coffee. You know, it's like, well, what do you call it? Mulatta.
But like, the whole way through that movie, Colin Farrell looks like he's trying to escape his own skin.
Yeah,
he looks like a skeleton that's trying to get out. He's just like fucking, oh Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, but they ripped off so much.
The lighter fluid,
like Daredevil, like logo, like burning up on the floor. But also the third act fight. The third act fight is such a ripoff of
the church. Yeah, but that's, I mean.
He's Daredevil. I know, but it was like, it is such
There's
got to
be a lot of Catholic guilt in there.
Yeah, it's such a fucking ripoff.
Yeah.
But to this day, it still tickles me pink that Daredevil was directed by the guy who directed Grumpy Old Men. It's like, can you imagine the studio executives watching Grumpy Old Men? It's like, this is the guy to direct Daredevil.
What I want to know is, with this, all the advantages we have in technology, why we haven't got Walter Matthau beating the fucking ever-living shit out of Lemon? What's his name?
Jack Lemon.
I want to see the two of them, the CGI, beating the shit out of each other in The Matrix or something like that. The Matrix, but it's Walter Matthau.
Walter Matthau. I love Walter Matthau.
Yeah,
he was a great Mr. Wilson.
The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, that last shot.
That last shot. Yeah, yeah. Iconic.
That is to sum up The Crow. Yeah. It is iconic, and it remains iconic, and it remains, if you feel that like, oh, I mean, my TV's not that big, but it was like, it filled the, I don't know what version I have, but it was like, it didn't look bad, it wasn't like overly grainy. If you have any of these problems with movies of the old times, then you're a dickhead. But like, it doesn't feel old to us. There's an element of us being, this being burned into our heads and being part of our personalities.
Yeah.
That it's very hard for us to divorce ourselves from.
Yeah.
But I still think it fucking rips.
It's an incredible film.
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie.
So,
if you haven't seen it, please seek it out. And, you know, I mean, check out the trailer for the remake.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I'm not here to talk shit about that. But for me, there's only one Crow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope that the new one, like, I would hope that rather than just being like, we're doing the same story completely
different. I just hope that it's not an exercise in style.
Yeah.
You know, if I have any hope for the remake, I hope that they retain the emotional quality, the emotional weight.
Because we were talking before, there's The Crow 2 and there's The Crow 3 City of Angels or 2 City of Angels? Either
two,
way.
2 City of Angels.
There's one where Sarah grows up and is fucked up because of what happened to her. There's a TV show, which I forgot until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
And the James O'Barr comics, there's multiple
things.
Yeah. But it never had the same impact as this. And it was... Unfortunately, Brandon Lee's death brought it to the bigger conscience. But
I mean, even like the comic, the original story of Eric Draven was born out of real tragedy, you know, like in James O'Barr's life. And so because of that, none of the subsequent stories were as good because none of them came from the same place.
Yeah.
The main reason The Crow exists, the main reason James O'Barr created this character is because of tragedy in his own life with his own girlfriend. You know, so because of that, none of the other Crow stories could ever recapture that because it's just coming from a different place.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with this. I mean, not to say, I mean, I never watched any of the other Crow stuff, but from what I understand, it's none of it could recapture this magic because there's so much about this movie that you couldn't recapture. You wouldn't want to recapture it, you know, because of the tragedy behind it. But it just so happens to also be a great film. There was like so much like this huge tragedy revolving around this story that was born of tragedy.
And it could have been terrible, or it might have been, you know, a misfire.
Yeah, it could have
totally.
Been. It could have been.
And everything just worked. Something I noticed, something I had noticed before, is that his makeup comes off slowly as the movie goes on.
Yeah.
So by the end, it's just him.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't notice that. That's a really good observation.
Because, like I said, you barely see him before the makeup, and it just like reveals.
And the first time he's revealed, it's just like, fuck yes.
Yes, there's so many air-punching moments.
Yeah, there's so many air-punching moments.
And I would like, I mean, we live in Malaysia. The Mummy's getting a fucking reissue in the US now. The first one.
Yeah.
I'd
watch that.
It's a fun movie, yeah. But we don't get any of that shit here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would love to see The Crow with an audience of people who are into it.
Yeah. No, I would love to, if there was like a midnight screening somewhere of this movie, I would love to be in wherever that fucking city is. it's the kind of thing that might play like on midnight, like at the Prince of Wales Theater. Fuck yeah. Let's do it. You know, we're going to have to start our own fucking film festival.
Yeah. We'll have The Crow. We'll have Brainstorm. Brainstorm? No,
Brain Scan.
Brainstorm also.
Brainstorm. Life Force.
Life Force. I need to rewatch Life Force. I have a copy here.
Life Force. It's basically porn.
Yeah. Toby Hooper, right?
Extro. It's Toby Hooper.
Extro. I've never seen Extro.
Extro is amazing.
Should we do all the Ghoulies movies as well or no?
All the what?
Ghoulies.
The Ghoulies.
The guys in the toilet?
Yeah. The Ghoulies. I fucking forgot about the Ghoulies. Yeah, we gotta do the Ghoulies.
Welcome to the next 6 months of Gavin Price.
Yeah. Nightbreed. Nightbreed.
Nightbreed? Nightbreed is like, I think that's respectable enough.
Yeah, Nightbreed, yeah.
That's not, like, Ghoulies is in the toilet, literally.
Yeah, literally.
The, the DVD cover, the video saying.
You know, you know what we should do? We should do the fucking Kickboxer series.
Yeah.
I was talking to Moon, my co-writer, for a project that we're working on. And I was like, you know the thing that people always get wrong about me? Like, I didn't become a filmmaker so I could do Killers of the Flower Moon. I became a filmmaker because I want to make Kickboxer 5. People, they keep misunderstanding my... I am not trying to be a prestige filmmaker. I want to make video nasties.
I
want to
make Street Fighter 2.
Yes.
With Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes.
The dark, gritty reboot of Street Fighter that no one asked for.
Yes. That is what I want to do.
And Kylie Minogue is going to be in it again for reasons.
Yes. Ming-Na will return. I want that fucking skinny Indian doctor from Temple of Doom to come back as Dalsim.
I forgot about him.
He was Dalsim.
Yes.
He was fucking Dalsim. The worst casting ever.
Well, Blanca was pretty bad as well.
Now
we're going to have to do Street Fighter.
Yeah, now that Dev Patel is an action hero, he can be Dalsim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's your Daiquiri reboot.
You got flame.
You got there before I could. So this is basically the next 6 months of our show. We're both too busy. Well, I keep up with some movies, but Gavin couldn't give a shit. So we're not going to be doing new movies. We're going to be doing whatever the fuck we feel like from the past.
Yeah.
We hope that we can impart upon you our love of those movies.
Yeah.
Let us know what else you think. I mean, I've never seen all the Ghoulies movies.
I've only seen the first one.
I hadn't seen Society. We want to do Society
next, right?
I have thoughts. I think this is going to be a short show.
Like,
that might be a double header.
No, I haven't seen Society in decades.
Well, surprise.
It's not great.
It's not great. Although, you know, Baywatch's Billy Warlock.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see how that one goes, and I'm sure there's going to be millions of people want to listen to that podcast.
No, I mean, it's niche, but then again, we've always been niche, so fuck it.
Yeah. Let us know what you think we should do next. I think, what would you say, Nightbreed, Kickboxer,
Last Action Hero?
Actually, I'm surprised we haven't done that, considering how long it's been.
Yeah.
While we're indulging ourselves.
Howard the Duck.
Howard the... Okay, fuck all of you telling us what we're going to do. That's just our list.
We cut our own list.
I mean, again, as a child with no sense of taste, I thought Howard the Duck was fucking great.
I got no problems with Howard the Duck. Yeah. Striking distance.
Striking distance.
They should have never put him in the water if they didn't want him to make waves.
We've never done Hudson Hawk either.
No, we haven't.
So
great fucking movie.
Yeah, so the thing is, we need to do these more than once a quarter.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we'll be doing this until 2037.
Yeah, we need to try.
We'll try.
Every now and then we'll throw in some like art house shit. Yeah. Like we'll throw in like an eat, drink, man, woman. The soup is good.
I saw Anatomy of a Fall. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then I watched Roadhouse after that.
Right.
And then after that, we watched The Beekeeper.
Oh, we know. That's a movie we need to do, like the original Roadhouse.
The original Roadhouse, yeah. I saw there was a tweet today. Someone was like, why did no one tell me the original Roadhouse was great? I married my husband because of this. And it was Sam Elliott tying his hair up in a bun.
It's like Ben Gazzara is just a fucking legend. He's like, I see you found my trophy room, Dolphin. The only thing missing is your ass.
All right, there are too many great 80s and 90s movies for us to do. Let us know if we should do Roadhouse, Ghoulies, Last Action Hero, Hudson Hawk next.
Yeah.
Tweet us at MyGapAndFries on everything. I still haven't sorted out the email. I don't think that's a problem so far. Nothing's been cancelled, so we're all good.
Yep.
And just remember, it can't rain all the time.
Can't rain all the time.
Thanks for listening. Good night.